Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. The death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
One minute after the hour, right here on Race on the Radio, October 24th, 2012, there is plenty of news to report today, of course. The Benghazi scandal has hit a fever pitch, of course, to the news media that is willing to report it. Not many are willing to. And you can clearly see that they're not willing to. I've got some great audio tonight. I am stacked with audio tonight. All, most of it evening news stuff, but I'm stacked with audio tonight. Stacked with it. In fact, I may not even have to speak for 2 hours. Got so much audio. I'm your host, Reese on the Radio. And again, major, major audio today. But I want to get into something. I should wait for this because I know that I need – I did the topic at the end of the show yesterday, so I'm wondering if I should lead with it. I don't feel like I should. I don't have any real purpose to lead with it, so I'm going to wait until later to talk about it. And, of course, you know that's Donald Trump. So you wait a little later, we'll get into that. I think we need to start off with the Benghazi deal. And because I have so much audio to play, you know, I think we should lead off with it because this is a big deal. And the network's lack of reporting this story is baffling. You know, I almost want to say that the media is complicit with a cover-up. I think that they are cohorts of the administration in covering this up. And it's disgusting. I'm saddened by it. It's, there's something to be said when I am more of a hard-hitting journalist than Brian Williams or Tom Brokaw. I know I'm better than George Stephanopoulos or Dan Rather. I know I'm more legitimate than them. But let me get into this. I don't have this set up any particular way. And I figured there are plenty of ways that we can talk about this. But let's start with our good friend Stephanie Cutter. I think it's appropriate that we start with her. And Stephanie Cutter, this is her on CNN talking about the politicalization of the Benghazi scandal. And this is what she told Brooke Baldwin of CNN, just to start us off.
You know, in terms of the politicization of this, you know, we are here at a debate, and I hope we get to talk about the debate. But the entire reason that this has become the you know, political topic it is, it's because of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. It's a big part of their stump speech. And it's reckless and irresponsible.
Stephanie, this is not
a debate. And they need to witness
just this revolution last
year. It was absolutely pertinent. People in the American, within the American public absolutely have a right to get answers.
The American people have a right to get answers. The only reason why this is in the forefront is because of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. In essence, Americans wouldn't care if this weren't for Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Now, that's just to start us off. There have been extensive reports about this. And it's for me, it's incredible for so many reasons. Here's the reason why, if you haven't heard already, why this story is so important. And that is because of how this played out for the first 14 days. And here's a breakdown, an ad that was posted maybe about a week and a half ago. But this is an important piece of audio, which pretty much talks to every aspect this was put out into the media by this administration. It opens with Anderson Cooper, and then, of course, you'll hear a series of people who are talking about the Benghazi incident that happened on September 11th of this year. And, you know, if people don't understand why this is an issue, they're buffoons. I mean, they're just flat-out idiots. And Stephanie Cutter thinks that they are, and she thinks that she can just gloss over that and, you know, rise above it. Nothing to see here. But here's a breakdown. Just listen to the audio.
In the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, Americans, American symbols, and two Arab countries tonight are under attack by radical Islamist forces, and someone at the American consulate in Benghazi is dead, unclear.
That was not aware of any actionable intelligence indicating that an attack on the U.S. mission in Benghazi was planned or imminent. This is not a case of protests directed at the United States.
It began spontaneously. We've seen rage and violence directed at American embassies
sparked by this hateful video
over an awful internet video that we had nothing to do with.
Protests that arose because of the outrage over the video.
This video is disgusting and reprehensible.
There is an offensive video or cartoon.
There is a hateful video.
This is in response to a video that is offensive.
You don't really believe that. Chris, absolutely, I believe that, because in fact it's the case.
They weren't there to demonstrate about some obscure thing. They had already said it was obviously a terrorist attack.
But the government there saying that they had warned the United States about the situation in Benghazi and that it was deteriorating.
They were before the attack. There were warnings about insufficient security in Benghazi.
Chris Stevens was the first U.S. ambassador killed in more than 30 years.
But in the months before his death, he talked about being worried about the never-ending security threats. I don't know how you argue we weren't caught flat-footed, specifically about the rise in Islamic extremism and growing Al-Qaeda presence.
It leads to questions.
Does it make any sense to you that the level of, or the small level of security he apparently had with him?
The White House story crumbling.
I would say yes. They were killed in the course of a terrorist attack.
Hillary Clinton admitted that Al-Qaeda was involved.
It wasn't just a mob action.
He said it was self-evident that what happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
What happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
The U.S. officials knew within 24 hours that this was an organized Al-Qaeda attack.
It said the U.S. government knew about Al-Qaeda's involvement within 24 hours of the attack.
In the intelligence community, those who were within the first 24 hours were saying this was a terrorist attack.
I've been ambassador Rice with the American people to have information.
There is more proof that this was all part of an elaborate cover-up by the administration.
It's either gross incompetence and negligence, or in fact, they are lying.
They're going to have a big investment in the narrative that not only is Osama dead, but Al-Qaeda is
some of them. And some of these militias are affiliated with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is very much alive.
Prove that Al-Qaeda is alive and well. If they're not dead, Al-Qaeda alive.
I was pretty certain, and continue to be pretty certain, that there were going to be bumps in the road.
So the bottom line, of course, is, you know, this is, of course, an ever-changing story. And now emails that were released last night show that an Al-Qaeda group had announced on Facebook that they were indeed responsible. Now, I want you to put this into context, folks. I want you to put this into context. These emails come out. that go all the way to the Situation Room, where people are watching the attacks happen in real time. A Facebook posting by this group says that they're responsible. Hillary Clinton, oddly enough, says this about the emails. Right? You know, don't disregard those emails. Nothing to see here. This is why I find this the most alarming. She says this in a press conference today.
You know, posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence. And I think it just underscores how fluid the reporting was at the time and continued for some time to be. You know, posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence. You know, posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence. You know, posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence. You know, posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence.
Posting something on Facebook isn't of itself evidence. But bitch, a YouTube video is? 17-minute video that no one watched? Pretty quick to claim that YouTube video was responsible for the deaths and the rioting. Quick to do that. Al-Qaeda group claims responsibility? Nah, but that's not evidence. Guy says that Muhammad was a pedophile and a womanizer? Yeah, that's evidence. Yeah, those Muslims, they went nuts behind that. We know it's the video. We know it's the video. It's definitely the video. No actionable evidence points to anything other than the YouTube video. And then Hillary Clinton has the gall to say this.
Posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence.
How stupid can this woman be? Or this administration, for that matter? Do they think that we're stupid? Somebody must think that we're stupid. Now, I want to give this Benghazi breakdown from Fox News' perspective, because I have to go into explaining to you how deep this goes as far as a cover-up by the major news media. I have to do this because this is going to be some long audio, so bear with me. If you haven't seen it, you need to. You need to hear it for yourself. This is on Brett Baer's show, which I told you plenty of times. It's got to be the best evening news program out there. Best evening news program out there. Gets a lot in within 30, 40 minutes, and then has time enough to have a little debate with his roundtable after the fact. Brings Democrats on with conservatives to hash it out. So listen to Brett Baer and the Fox News report.
Well, the White House had information on the Benghazi attack, but it was terrorism almost real time, and now more questions surface as new evidence is revealed. This is Special Report. Just 13 days to go before America votes, emails obtained by Fox News show our nation's top leaders were aware terrorists were taking credit for attacking the U.S. mission in Libya the very day it happened. And while the White House is now saying there was still confusion, there are new questions about what could have been done in those early hours as the attack was still ongoing. Here's Fox Team coverage tonight. National Security Correspondent Jennifer Griffin looks at the trail of information and the response, or lack of it. But we begin with Chief White House Correspondent Ed Henry on those emails, the explanations, and the election. Good evening, Ed.
Good evening, Brett. The White House wanted the focus today to be on the president's marathon get out the vote push, but these new emails are raising new questions about who knew what when over Benghazi. We're going to pull an all-nighter. Six battlegrounds in 48 hours, a schedule so jam-packed, it's the surest sign yet President Obama's campaign knows they've lost momentum and are trying to seize it back. with a final pitch that includes the claim Al-Qaeda is on the run.
Al-Qaeda's on the path to defeat, and Osama bin Laden is dead. I accept that problem.
Yet new emails about the terror attack in Benghazi, first obtained by Fox News, reveal on the day of the assault, top White House officials knew that Al-Qaeda-type group Ansar al-Sharia had claimed responsibility, with one email sounding the alarm about the Al-Qaeda-type group by saying, quote, Embassy Tripoli reports the group claimed responsibility on Facebook and Twitter and has called for an attack on Embassy Tripoli. And just hours after the emails came in, the president suggested to CBS News the attack was not just random mob violence. In a clip, the network did not immediately air.
You're right that this is not a situation that was exactly the same as what happened in Egypt. My suspicion is that there are folks involved in this who were looking to target Americans from the start.
That's scary in and of itself. CBS did not air that portion of the interview the day after the attack when he did the interview where he said that this appears that it was not like the attack or not like the protests that were happening in Cairo. They edited that out. CBS News, strike one. Strike one. Trust me, I've got better audio. I've got better audio coming up. Okay, we continue.
Questions about why U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Susan Rice claimed it was a spontaneous reaction to protests over an anti-Islam film, as well as this claim by White House spokesman Jay Carney on September 18th.
Our initial information, and that includes all information, we saw no evidence to back up claims by others that this was a pre-planned or premeditated attack. That it was, we saw evidence that it was sparked by the reaction to this video.
Today, Carney downplayed the emails, noting they include non-classified information culled from social media sites, telling reporters aboard Air Force One.
I and others made very clear that our preliminary assessments were preliminary, that an investigation was underway, and that as more facts became available, we would make the American people aware of them.
And today, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton backed up the White House account.
Posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence. And I think it just underscores how fluid the reporting was at the time and continued for some time to be.
Carney added the Al-Qaeda-affiliated group later claimed it was not involved in the attack. Though the top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee tells Fox the only suspect now in custody in the terror attack is a member of that group. He's described as a suspected participant and not a commander of the assault.
We don't know very much about him because we have not been able to have access to him, and that's one of the problems with the policy of this administration.
All of this playing out as the president in what he's calling a 48-hour marathon is making trust the central issue of the final day.
There's no more serious issue on a presidential campaign than trust. Trust matters.
You can't help but laugh, right, Mayor? Mary's in the background dying. There's nothing more important than trust. Bull crap. Anyway,
no,
we continue.
Not bull crap, bullshit.
We continue.
Now, today, three Republican senators, McCain, Graham, and Ayotte, fired off a letter to the president saying they're disturbed that the White House knew it might be terror within 2 hours of the attack. They're demanding the president finally come forward and directly address the American people about Benghazi with a speech or a news conference. Brett?
And I just to be clear, what else does Secretary Jay Carney said, I think within a few hours, the organization itself, Ansar al-Sharia, claimed it had not been responsible. But again, Ali al-Harazi is being held by Tunisian authorities. He, as we heard from Sashmi Chambers, is tied to Ansar al-Sharia.
That's right. And Senator Chambers is saying this is the only person who is in custody. And in fact, he is tied to that al-Qaeda affiliated group. So the bottom line is that while there were conflicting reports about whether or not the group was claiming responsibility for a terror attack, someone connected to that group is now in custody related to the terror attack.
The only one. Ed, thank you. The attack on the consulate in Libya triggered a wide array of moves by the Pentagon, but help never arrived, and four Americans, as you heard, including the U.S. ambassador, were killed. National Security Correspondent Jennifer Griffin looks at that part of the story.
Okay, now I won't get into that whole part of the story because there's this whole debate about whether or not security forces could have gotten there in a particular amount of time, about people being some 480 miles away, how long it would have taken them to get there. That is another story, and I do want to get into that a little later. But let me just say something. I just played that whole audio, folks. I just gave you the top of that show. I wanted to give it play to you in real time. I wanted to give it to you in real time. From the opening of Bret Baier opening up his show, giving all that information. He did that up until he was about to go into that second report. That was 5 minutes and 30 seconds dedicated to the story about the emails. Okay? Only 5 minutes and 30 seconds. He's got an hour-long program, and he went into it in 5 minutes and 30 seconds. That's nothing. Here's where it gets frightening, folks. Okay? ABC News today. ABC News. This is the biggest story, right? It's a big story. It entails cover-up, changes of stories, new details about an assassination on the anniversary of September 11th. I swear to you, this is ABC News' coverage of the story in Benghazi. Real time here, folks.
We have learned the name of a Tunisian man taken into custody in connection with the attack. It is 28-year-old Ali Harzi, and the White House also weighed in today on emails set while the attack was underway. The emails informed them that a radical Islamic group was claiming responsibility, but Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says those emails were not hard evidence and all of the incoming information had to be evaluated.
30 seconds in a half-hour program. That was Diane Sawyer's report on the Benghazi emails. That's it. To make it even more laughable, to make it even incredibly laughable, I believe... Yes. This is NBC News' coverage of the Benghazi... The Benghazi attack emails. They, wisely enough, did 2 minutes worth. But listen to their report.
U.S. officials confirmed that authorities in Tunisia have arrested a man who may be connected to that deadly attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi last month. And tonight, more emails about that attack are making news. Our report from Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell.
As a possible suspect for the Benghazi attack is being questioned in Tunisia, critics disclosed State Department emails from that night obtained by NBC News. The first alert read, Embassy Tripoli reports approximately 20 armed people fired shots. Explosions have been heard as well. Ambassador Stevens and four embassy personnel are in the compound safe haven. Instead of friendly Libyan militia was helping fight off the attack. Soon another email said it was over. The firing at the U.S. diplomatic mission in Benghazi has stopped and the compound has been cleared. A response team on site attempted to locate personnel. 2 hours later, another email said a known terrorist group was linked to Al-Qaeda. Ansar al-Sharia said it was responsible. Embassy Tripoli reports the group claims responsibility on Facebook and Twitter and has called for an attack on Embassy Tripoli. The next day, the same terrorist group denied that it was involved, causing more confusion. You know... Posting something on Facebook is not, in and of itself, evidence. And I think it just underscores how fluid the reporting was at the time and continued for some time to be. Shortly before midnight on 9/11, another email reported that the assault on Benghazi had escalated. The current shelter location is under attack by mortar fire. There are reports of injuries. Today, the White House and the State Department said there were hundreds, even thousands of reports that night and in the following days. All had to be analyzed and assessed. Today, Secretary Clinton appealed for patience on Benghazi while a review board investigates what went wrong. But at this point in the presidential campaign, the White House knows any detail can become a new source of criticism. Andrea Mitchell, NBC News, Washington.
2 minutes, 4 seconds. 2 minutes, 4 seconds. Still gave the president cover. Obviously a little more in depth than ABC News, which I'm stunned. I'm completely stunned. Okay, last email before I go to a break. Last one. I mean, last report, CNN. How long is this one? Wow, they did. Now, they're a news network, for crying out loud. Just like Fox News, where I told you, 5 minutes, 30 seconds. They did, what was their length? 2 minutes, 35 seconds. 2 minutes, 35 seconds. This is what we got.
In the middle of the recent war, certainly has provided more ammunition for critics to say the administration hasn't been forthcoming with what they knew about the Benghazi investigation. But they also highlight a growing frustration among those within the administration who are saying, enough already. Let's get on with bringing those responsible to justice.
Now they're reporting what the White House is saying about enough already, let's get to bringing those people to justice. You have a guy, he's in Tunisia, you can't touch him. Please knock it off.
I've said it, and I'll say it one more time. No one wants to find out what happened more than I do.
Secretary Hillary Clinton came out firing today after emails obtained by CNN made clear that shortly after the attack began, the State Department notified officials from the White House, the top intelligence agency, the Pentagon, and FBI that an attack was underway and that Ambassador Stevens was in the compound. Just 2 hours later, another email indicated the Libyan extremist group Ansar al-Sharia was claiming responsibility for the attack on social media websites.
So what you saw in the emails is in real time was a real description. And if you notice, there was no talk of demonstrations or other things, and it was clearly very early identified with a terrorist affiliate of AQIM.
Clinton said, quote, cherry-picking a document does not tell the whole story, and an initial claim of responsibility is not solid intelligence. Posting something on Facebook is not in and of itself evidence. And I think it just underscores how fluid the reporting was at the time and continued for some time to be.
The group denied being responsible the next day. In fact, intelligence officials do not believe this Libyan group is solely responsible. The U.S. government official told CNN that the latest intelligence suggests a core group of suspects that launched the initial part of the attack on the mission was somewhere between 35 and 40. Around a dozen of them are believed to have ties to either al-Qaeda in Iraq or al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Still others were believed to be part of Ansar al-Sharia, and many of them were said to be Egyptian jihadi. Still others were looters, say officials, and unarmed. Now, a suspect in the attack is being held in Tunisia, where the U.S. has been denied access to him, according to Senator Saxby Chambliss. Now, he's the ranking Republican on the Intelligence Committee. CNN has been told that the suspect's name is Ali Ani al-Hazri. He's a Tunisian connected to extremist groups in North Africa. The U.S. first became aware of al-Hazri when he posted on social media details of the attack while it was happening. When he left Libya for Turkey, he was detained by Turkish officials at the request of the U.S., and he was later transferred to Tunisia. Well,
Suzanne Kelly, thank you.
Yet she still didn't mention that the person that's being held in Tunisia is a part of the group that claimed responsibility. Totally washed over.
And they say, what did the chick say? Oh, just because it's mentioned on Facebook doesn't mean.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? If you mention on Facebook, if a regular citizen mentions on Facebook that they committed a crime or if they mention something about their job on Facebook, I mean, you go for an interview. Some places want you to give up your Facebook information. Are you kidding me? It's the way of the world, broad. Wake the F up.
I found that a little amazing to me personally.
And as something as serious as that, that should take more precedent than you saying, I hate going to work, and then you get fired.
It's a little bizarre on most parts, but, you know, again, you heard what Hillary Clinton said, and I played it in every audio piece. Hillary Clinton said posting something on Facebook is not evidence. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound weird, but, you know, if somebody says on Facebook that they're going to do something, you know, to an elected official, and I'm not suggesting that I have or I would, but, I mean, if somebody were to say something like that, you know, should they be arrested? Should they be detained? It's not evidence that you're going to commit a crime or that you have committed a crime. It's not evidence. So this is where they back themselves into a corner. You know, it's, again, very, very stupid and very, very typical. of this administration doing whatever it can to cover its own ass. But anyway, you get my point. I want to get into Brian Williams' interview with President Obama when we get back. And, of course, after that, we will break into Donald Trump's announcement today that I waited with bated breath and got my heart broken yet again. Oh, I'm just so disgusted today. It's Reese on the Radio. I'll stick around.
In the last few years, America's been knocked down. 23 million people can't find full-time work. And we borrow $4 billion every single day, much of it from China. If someone doesn't get the job done, you got to hold them accountable. Obama's second term would be a rerun of the first, and our country just couldn't survive that. We need someone who could turn it around fast, and that man is Mitt Romney. There's not much time left, and the future of our country is at stake.
American Crossroads is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And now it's time for Chris Matthews, Absolute Idiot.
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
Hey, Romney, one more Romney.
He doesn't cover up scandals in the Middle East.
What was the scandal that was covered up?
Benghazi.
What was the scandal?
Well, I mean,
nail it. What was the scandal?
He said there was a video. It was not about the video.
Yeah, it was about the video. Read the newspaper. Thank you. Everybody knows it's about the video. It's all about the video. Thank you very much. We're right back with more Hardball.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist. The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor. The party of segregation. The party of the KKK. They're the racists.
Yo, man. Hey, you ever go to these bars, right? It's like a nice enough place, nice enough people. But the bartender thinks he's too fancy, man. You know? I'm like,
hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night out.
So there's this bar. Everybody's like, you gotta go. I'm at the door. What's the password?
I don't know.
We entered through a phone booth or something crazy.
Oh, my God. They have the best drinks here. It's amazing.
Ooh, I saw the bartender. He looked like a nice dude. He was pouring a drink with one big-ass ice cube. I'm like, excuse me, sir. Could I get a beer? He gave me this look like, why are you even in here? I was confused. Did we start on a bad note? He's wearing waxing his mustache and a lab coat. I'm like, what's the matter? Is beer too boring? He's like, well, this cocktail dates back to pre-Civil War New Orleans.
Wow.
It's real cool, man. Could you suggest something tighter? He hands me this list of a typed up on a typewriter. I ordered something and he lit it on fire. Dude, you've been watching way too much Boardwalk Empire.
For real. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Yeah.
Did you have to go to college for this?
Did you?
It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Sup, man?
Did you have to go to college for this?
Same.
I know your game's tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Keep it simple, sir, because I ain't nothing to muddle with. I got some burlesque dancers I'm trying to cuddle with. So whip some drinks up twice and double it.
Well, have you tried our aviation or Ramos Fizz?
Whoa. Are you even speaking English, Chief? Or rum and coke times two, capiche?
Oh, you must mean our handcrafted Cuba Libre.
If it's quick, bro, you're moving slower than
it's
instant
replay.
He dripped a half ounce of something I couldn't pronounce. And by that time, I clap a chicken straight down. I'll speak easy, boss, but I gotta call you bluff. You need to drink, dude. Can't be all fast, huh? Pour the liquor in and twirl it in a circle. But you're on them things like a Shapeway commercial. I'll have a beer, guy, whenever you're done mixing. Second thought, boycott. Prohibition.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this?
With muddled sage. No? Okay.
Yes, this is a smoked salmon-infused vodka with a few drips of ice plant tincture served over crushed lava rock.
What's star fruit? Hey, are you putting raw eggs in that? You don't get salmon, there's no...
This serious? You don't know. Everybody knows you never go full retard.
What do you mean?
Check it out. Dustin Hoffman, Rain Man, look retarded, act retarded. Not retarded. Count two picks, cheat cards. Autistic. Shut. Not retarded. Yeah, Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump. Slow, yes, retarded, maybe. Braces on his legs. But he charmed the pants off next to him and won a ping pong competition. That ain't retarded. He was a goddamn war hero. Right. You know any retarded war heroes? You went full retard, man. Never go full retard.
We're back 36 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com, October 24th, 2012.
Yeah, excuse me. Pardon me.
Anyway. Okay, I got a Tavis Smiley thing that I want to read a little later. I think I'll wait until the next hour to read this up. But I think it's important that you guys get to hear it if you haven't read it yourself. It's something he posted on the Huffington Post called the Top 20... 'Cause 10 ain't enough. Reasons, excuses black folk will give if Obama loses the election, that is. And I'll read that a little later. Tavis Smiley has, I don't know. I didn't know Tavis Smiley had a comedic side, but I will read it nonetheless, whether it bombs or not. I'll let you know. I seriously doubt that it will be successful. Okay, so if you didn't hear this, folks, this little incident, so to speak, broke my heart. And I waited for it and waited for it and waited for it. 12 o'clock came, and then all of a sudden it was 12:01. I looked on my cell phone, at my Facebook app, and there it was. It popped up. What was he gonna do? What was Donald Trump gonna say? Now, look, I predicted it yesterday that this was going to be associated with Barack Obama's college records. I was the one who said it. And the college records were clearly a part of this whole thing, because it is important. But I thought Donald Trump was going to tell me he obtained them. I thought he was going to tell me that I have them, folks. I got the records. And with that, we get some information that we've been dying to find out. And what did he do? He delivered this garbage.
President Obama is the least transparent president in the history of this country. There's never been anything like it. We know very little about our president. I'm very honored to have gotten him to release his long-form birth certificate, or whatever it may be. Now, many, many people have questions, and very serious questions. I have a deal for the president, a deal that I don't believe he can refuse, and I hope he doesn't. If Barack Obama opens up and gives his college records and applications, and if he gives his passport applications and records, I will give to a charity of his choice, Inner City Children in Chicago, American Cancer Society, AIDS research, anything he wants, a check immediately for $5 million. The check will be given within 1 hour after he releases all of the records so stated. He'll be doing a great service for the country if he does this. If he releases these records, it will end the question and indeed the anger of many Americans. They'll know something about their president. Their president will become transparent like other presidents. So, all he has to do to get $5 million for a charity or charities of his choice is for his colleges to immediately give his applications and records, and also to release his passport records. When he does that, to my satisfaction, it is complete. This check is delivered immediately. A lot of people will be very, very happy to see this happen. Frankly, it's a check that I very much want to write. I absolutely would be the most happy of all if I did, in fact, make this contribution through the president to these charities. One caveat, the records must be given by October 31st at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Mr. President, not only will I be happy, and by the way, totally satisfied, but the American people will be happy. And you know what? Those charities will be very, very happy. Thank you, Mr. President.
You suck!
Snore.
I snored my ass off behind that.
You got $5 million, Trump. Take that $5 million and bribe...
And bribe a guy!
And bribe the people that Barack could only afford to pay probably, you know, $100,000 to or some shit.
That's the funny part.
Say, hey, here's... You know, he has $2.5 million.
Yeah.
Give me the records.
Barack Obama spent some $4 million protecting the documents.
Oh, he spent $4 million.
Yeah, like $4 million protecting these documents.
I thought it was only like $100,000.
No, it's $4 million protecting these documents, passport.
He's probably still paying somebody because now they're probably like, what you want to do? You know, you're about to lose this presidency.
Give $5 million to one of the lawyers. You know, well, then he would be violating crime.
Give $5 million to the lawyer's secretary.
No, but I'm saying, well, that would be, you know.
Yeah, I know, but still.
Lawyer-client privilege, but.
It's still breaking the law anyway.
But I know, but the bottom line is, like, if I'm going to use my $5 million, look, I'm sorry, I ain't giving it to no Negroes in Chicago. That's over. You can knock that off. All right, maybe the cancer research or AIDS research, that's all right.
No, you know what? But he says it's a Barack Obama's choice. Now, you know how, you know, they're always talking, they're all, you know, every time they talk about Obamacare and charities,
yes,
and,
yes.
You know, they talk specifically about children with autism.
Right.
Maybe you have a child that is autistic. Well, Obamacare will take care of that child. So, well, $5 million, my man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you, I mean,
somebody's gotta
if you have nothing to hide, and I'm not trying to imply that you do, I really, you know, could.
Really? $4 million in lawyers? That
well,
doesn't imply
I mean,
that
but
it doesn't
I'm not imply. I'm not saying I know nothing. I can give you what my opinion is. I can speculate on what I think. I can give you my personal speculation, but that doesn't matter. If you're innocent, if you have nothing to hide, and this man is, and you know, Trump has been on his back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This whole time, you know, the whole, he really went off in that interview.
Well, look, the fact that he could force him to release that birth certificate, and he didn't have to offer up anything.
No,
he didn't have to offer up $5 million, but I mean, I don't know. I thought this was a little lame. I thought there were going to be some evidence.
No, I thought it was lame too because when the media is spouting or when Donald Trump says, like, you know, I've got something big, you know,
right, right, right.
There's going to be a big announcement.
You're expecting a
We're talking about Donald Trump.
Right. Your degree.
You're expecting a meteor.
Let's take a call. The number's 347-308-8701. I've clearly got someone that I don't recognize on the line. You're on the line, sir. Who's this?
It's me. You talk about me?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay. Calling from Michigan. My name is Matu.
You're calling from where?
Michigan.
Michigan.
Oh, and what's your name?
Matu.
Matu?
Yeah.
Hello, Matu. How are you? Thank you for calling in the show.
Yeah, pretty good. This Donald Trump thing. Basically, I think this is just Donald Trump is an entrepreneur. And I think more than anything, it gets him on TV. It gets him a national spotlight. It keeps him relevant, in American culture. And I think that's a brand that he can sell. You
know? I'm sorry. Let me ask you a quick question here, or make a statement and ask you a question. Donald Trump is. Everybody knows Donald Trump. He's known everywhere. In my personal opinion, I would have to disagree with you because I don't think that Donald Trump needed this to keep him relevant. He's a gazillionaire. He has, his own.
Worth $25 billion.
I mean,
yeah.
He doesn't need this
for publicity.
His hair alone gives him enough, more publicity than this would.
Well, but you're talking the market. Donald Trump is his primary business is real estate development.
Sure.
His show, The Apprentice, and things of that nature. Moving into the media aspect and pop culture, staying relevant in pop culture. He absolutely is a businessman, and he absolutely needs to be on the screen, at the cutting edge, controversial. He absolutely needs this he don't need it, but
right.
he's an entrepreneur, and you don't tell an entrepreneur, I got $25 million and I don't want no more. No,
you're absolutely right. Yeah. I don't believe that $25 billion should be enough for Donald Trump, and it probably isn't. As a billionaire, he knows that, there's no such thing as stay money, it's
right.
go money.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question. It's an interesting point you bring up about being sort of in the fold. But let me ask you this in essence. Do you believe that he's got a relevant challenge to the President of the United States to release college records? And if so, or if not, do you at least find it suspicious that the President of the United States is spending so much money to keep that stuff from being exposed?
Well, and there's probably some, the curiosity, like you said. I agree with you. There may be, if nothing else, it's curious. But no different from Mitt Romney and his tax returns.
Well, hold on. No. Yeah. Mitt Romney has released 2 years of tax return, which is required by law, 2011 and 2010. He didn't give anything. And not only that, he also gave an estimation of some 10 years of tax returns. So if you were to compare tax returns versus school records at Occidental, Columbia, and Harvard versus tax returns by Mitt Romney, Mitt Romney's got him beat. 3-1, 3-9.
Let me say this, man, and I think this is where the folly comes out. Now, let me ask you two a question.
Sure.
Do y'all believe, with us living in a European culture, and whatever school he went to is a European school, all right, do you actually believe that if Europeans wanted those records, he ain't got them in the bottom of his shoe? Now, what makes y'all think if white folk really wanted them records out there, they couldn't get them out there?
It's funny that you say that, Matu, because and I'm going to use your premise here, okay? President Barack Obama has paid $4 million for those white people to protect those records. In fact, he hired $4 million worth of lawyers and attorneys to keep those records sealed, even his passport records.
Dude,
so if you want to talk about If you want to talk about how the Europeans, hold on, Matu. If you're talking about if the European man or the white man, and I'm sure that's what you mean,
that's
you're saying
exactly
if the white man wanted it, he could get it. But the bottom line is that this black president is using the white man to hide those records, and therefore they're not exposed. And he spent some $4 million to do it.
Listen, man. Now we're getting a little cartoonish. You and I both know they leaked national securities. Those same doggone lawyers he got hired, if they could get access to them, they could leak those things, and ain't no telling where they would come from. So,
well, okay,
I mean, let's not play
no
games.
I'm glad you bring that up.
Yeah.
I'm glad you bring that up, Matu, because let's talk about this. Do you know who Jack Ryan is?
No, who's Jack Ryan, man?
Okay, and Dennis will probably clear this up for me, but Jack, I'm certain his name is Jack Ryan, but Jack Ryan was running for the Illinois Senate against Barack Obama. He was married to a woman by the name of Jeri Ryan, who's an actress that was featured on a TV show called Boston Public. She played 7 of 9 on Star Trek, on one of the Star Trek series. She's a very, very tall woman, very, very pouty lips. She was married to him. They had a divorce, and their divorce records were sealed. When President Obama was running against Ryan, he had those records unsealed and exposed that Jeri Ryan, this actress, was exposed to these sex parties and all this stuff. The president's campaign had these records unsealed and given out to the public. These were sealed divorce records. And this was the Obama campaign that went and found those records and had them released to the general public in order to kick Ryan out of the race. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. I mean, what? Connect that to the point that we're talking about.
Well, the point that I'm talking about is, as you said, that if somebody wants those records released, they'll get them.
Right.
Well, during 2007, when he started running, 2008, 2009, as president, all the way to where we are now, people have been fighting to get those records. In fact, there have been court appearances where they've tried to get these records released, and Barack Obama has hired lawyers to prevent them from being released, and the people who are trying to get the records released have been thwarted every time.
Okay,
so
let's go here, Reese. Okay,
sure.
let's say you know, it appears that I don't know it. It sounds like you know that information better than me. So let's use that as factual information that you're saying. No problem.
Okay, and I appreciate that.
Okay, all right. Let's go this way. Let's go to the extreme and say one. Let's say he didn't go to college, right? I mean,
okay.
In other words, let's see what can we get out of this when he releases, right? Let's go to the extreme. One, he lied. The nigga didn't ever go. Or two, he took special ed classes. I mean, what comes of this? Give me the extremes. If he did go to college, what is in there that's going to prove he was a woman? What could it show?
That's a great question. So let me answer it this way,
and
I'll try to be put some brevity on it and try to be as succinct as I possibly can. You're saying, like, what would be the issue if we found this out? Well, here's where some of the allegations lie. Barack Obama, when he wrote the book Dreams from My Father, he had a bio that was put out by the publishing company with a series of other people. It's like this big booklet that the publishing company talks about all the new books that they're putting out. Barack Obama's book, Dreams from My Father, was one of the books that were coming out, and he was a part of the bio list. Well, in the bio, it says Senator Barack Obama, or Illinois Senator Barack Obama, and it gave his background. In the bio, it read, Kenyan-born and Indonesian and Hawaii-raised. When they found this bio, it was reported on Breitbart. They got a copy of it. The publishing company said, oh, that was a typo. Further investigation proved that the author of the book writes their own bio. So the reason why people are asking to see these college records is to find out whether or not Barack Obama, even if it wasn't true, if Barack Obama went into Harvard, Occidental, or Columbia and wrote down on his applications that he was in Kenya so that he could receive special privilege like foreign student aid, things of that nature. He's hiding them because, remember, the big allegation that Barack Obama has been fighting the most is that he's born in Kenya. He's got a bio that he wrote, he authored, says that he's Kenyan-born. Now, if he was signing official documents in going to school, going to college, and receiving federal funding, and he said that he was Kenyan-born in those official documents, then indeed the President of the United States broke the law. Not once, not twice, but three times. And if he has a passport that he's also refused to expose or to let people see,
well, on his passport.
No, but he's not letting anyone see them. His passport records. On his passport records, does it say that he's a Hawaiian citizen? Or does it say that he's Kenyan? Or does it say that he's Indonesian? Why is he keeping that stuff from the public? If everybody thinks that Mitt Romney's tax records are so important, who could possibly against that or be juxtaposed to not be as interested in Barack Obama's personal information when it comes
Reese. All right, now here, let me see if I can sum up in a couple words the allegations. What would be uncovered, or what, when we pull this curtain back with these records, what will be exposed? It's possible that he a liar. Well, good grief. No, I mean, just one, he a damn liar. Now, what politician you know in this culture ain't a damn liar to a certain degree? I mean, he a liar. You think people going to not vote for him because he a liar?
Well, I would say this, that when the president says that he is going to have the most transparent presidency of any administration, and we can't even find out what college he went to. Remember the scrutiny that George W. Bush got when it was found out that he was a C student at Yale.
Yeah.
But yet he had a better grade point average than John Kerry and Al Gore. But yet when they found out he was a C student, that's all they could joke about. Oh, he's stupid. President Bush is stupid.
Well, he really is stupid, though.
Okay, see what I'm saying? And the only reason why you know he's stupid is because we saw that C average at Yale.
No, I didn't see the C average. I listened to him talk. I listened to his thinking process and how he draws his conclusion, his low level of vocabulary. So that
he wasn't a public speaker.
He was not very articulate. There's no disputing there. That don't make him stupid. I want to bring a couple of guys in before we go into that the top of the hour, Matu. Can you stick around?
Yeah, I can stick around for a little bit.
You got it. Here's Dennis the Menace, Dennis the Mass Menace on the line, and Edward in Connecticut. Dennis, so, Matu doesn't appear to even care or think this is relevant.
Well, back to the Ryans. That was a sex scandal, you know.
Yeah, the sex scandal, right.
And all that stuff harmed the minor child in it. And Ryan had said later, he said, let me be the only person this has happened to. Don't ask for Ted Kennedy's, talking about divorce records, etc. Don't ask for John McCain's. Don't ask for Joe Lieberman's. Just stop. This is not a good precedent for American society if you really want the best and brightest to run. Now, away from that, getting back to Donald Trump. You know, Donald won. Because we're all talking about him. And we're talking about the controversy, again, about Obama's records. He knew damn well that wasn't going to be thrown out. By that, by being thrown out, I mean Obama wasn't going to take the $5 million.
Oh, he knew
we're all talking about it. Free publicity. He should have just said also, and by the way, Celebrity Apprentice will be starting soon.
That's right.
Edward, what say you?
About which?
Either one. I mean, Matu just says that he doesn't see any real interest, or should we even care if the president's a liar? So what? They're all liars.
You know, I agree. You know, I like that last caller. I agree with him in a lot of things he said. I don't think anybody who's going to vote is going to change their vote no matter what Donald Trump says or what comes out. You know, even if Obama puts the school records out and they find a transcript where he wrote in his essay they write to go to college and say he used to run around in Kenya with a bone in his nose, nobody's going to give a damn.
You know, if I were Donald Trump, and we'll go to the top of the hour, Matu, stick around, we'll go to the top of the hour, because I've got to play this Tavis Smiley top 20 list. I got to read it at least. Stick around. One thing that I said Donald Trump should have done, to me, it would have made more sense than anything else in the world. Just say, I'm giving $1 billion. You're never going to lose it. I will give $1 billion to the charity of your choice. That's it. No questions asked. I'd have just said it. I'll give $1 billion. It doesn't matter. You're not going to lose the money. Obama's not going to take $1 billion from you. Unless Obama turns around and turns around. Let's see if this motherfucker's kidding. I mean, let's see if he's really serious.
Yeah, I mean, then you can make up your own charity and, you know.
I'll take $1 billion.
All right, here you go. I'll lose the presidency, damn it. I was born in Kenya. Here's my damn records. So I falsified records and took federal aid on a, you know, foreign student.
Visa or whatever.
Visa or whatever. But give me that damn $1 billion.
Let's go to the top of the hour. Stick around. It's Reset
Radio.
Because
I'm not going
to
make
$1 billion.
One,
the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reset on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
I see some black people looking at me, man. It ain't us, it's the media. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking dish, okay? 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 When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, bitch. Ted Koppel ain't never took this shit from me. Niggas have. So you think I got 3 guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, it's Mike Wallace. Run!
One minute after the hour right here on Reset on the Radio, October the 24th, 2012, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Now, folks, I don't know whether or not you're familiar with Tavis Smiley. Some of you are. Some of you are not. I don't know. I'm not really sure. But I know he's not much of a comedian. I mean, I've never seen him to be much of a comedian. I mean, for Christ's sakes, he does a show with Cornel West, and he is not funny in the least. I don't care what anybody says. Not funny at all. They are not funny people. But he has put out this this list, and I think this is a perfect example of the left, who are really, really desperate about Obama's chances to win re-election. People like Tavis Smiley, who, you know, he was a ardent supporter of President Obama during the 2008 campaign, has now said that Barack Obama has abandoned the poor, and he and Cornel West went on his poverty tour, whatever it is. So now he's putting out this list in the Huffington Post about the top 20 reasons. Let me just read it verbatim. The top 20, 'cause 10 ain't enough, reasons, excuses, black folk will give if Obama loses. Number one, they said Obama was winning. So that's why they said he was winning, so I guess there was no reason for them to go. I guess that's what it's to me. Apparently this all needs clarity. Anyway, number two, I didn't get to the polls, but I did say a prayer for the brother. Number three, you know they wasn't going to let no black man serve no 2 terms. Really, he wrote it exactly like that. Number four, see what had happened was, I swear to you, he wrote it that way. Number five, I couldn't get my outfit together.
Well, wait, I'm sorry. Come again. What is this that you're reading?
This is the top 20, 'cause 10 ain't enough, reasons or excuses black folk will give if Obama loses.
Oh, my God.
Number six, racism. Number seven, I must have caught that Romnesia. Is it 2012 already? Really? Number eight. They knew in the second term he was finally going to hook us up. Because it's a 4 year.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Number nine. That damn Stacey Dash. It's all her fault.
Oh, my God.
Number 10. They suppressed my votes. That's a real one, my friend. That's exactly what they're going to say. Number 11. I'm part of the black bourgeoisie 1%. I had to vote for Roe Money.
Oh.
Romney. Roe Money. That's how he wrote it. Number 12. That line was too long. Number 13. I ran by the house right after work because I forgot my sample ballot, got me something to eat, sat down for a quick minute, and so he's blaming nigga-itis. Anyway.
Girl, it was raining.
That was number 14. Girl, it was raining. Number 15, they stole it. And then he writes in quotes, in parentheses, not impossible, whatever. Number 16, it's a con, oh, sorry, it's a conspiracy. Ha ha! Clearly my favorite. Number 17, the media, okay, the Fox News Channel. Oh, the Fox News Channel caused them to lose. Number 18, my favorite, all Negroes love this one. The Illuminati took him out. He wasn't going along with the program. Number 19, I had to work that day. Stop. Stop, Negro, stop. And number 20, out of the top 20 reasons, or the top 20, because it ain't 10 ain't enough reasons or excuses black folk will give if Obama loses, number 20 is, I thought that was next Tuesday. Dang, my bad. That's their reasoning. It couldn't get any stupider than what I just read. Let's go to Edward. Edward, this is, well, you know blacks are going to give him plenty of excuses if he loses. Do you think any of them apply?
Oh, definitely. I'm just sad that he put racism at number six and not number one.
That's what I was like, wow, they didn't put that as number one?
Mateo, do you agree with any one of those, or
man,
are you going to be using
man,
any
let
of those?
Me tell you something, man. Let me tell you something. I was laughing, man. Yeah, I know you had me on mute. Man, I mean, almost all of them, they actually was hysterical. But let me say this. I don't want to take the conversation serious. But what I think that does is it highlights the immaturity, the political immaturity of the black community, which is a real thing.
Mm.
That's real. And it is funny. It's very funny.
So you believe that I'm using your words. You believe that there is a quote unquote black immaturity in politics in and of itself?
Absolutely. We're children when it comes to politics. Absolutely.
Oh, you're gonna have to elaborate on that one.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to charge you if I do it, right? Well, I mean,
get in line.
Yeah. Well, in short, if you go any constituency group, politics is about constituency groups.
Mm-hmm.
The black community is a constituency group, but they have no agenda. That's one.
Okay.
There is no black agenda. If I was to say, Reese, go tell me the black agenda, the reason why blacks ended up voting because of the give me the agenda that they voted for. In other words, they put him in there because this was the agenda. They talked with him. He said he would endorse it, and now they're voting for him. Where's the black agenda?
Right, exactly. You're absolutely right. In other words, there was nothing that suggested that there was something on a platform that Obama stood for that African Americans were saying, oh, you know what? He's voting for, you know, he endorses that. I'm voting for him.
But
it wasn't
this,
based
but
on
even what's immature, Reese, is this. The actual voting is the end result of political involvement. The strategies and the things that determine whether or not you have a consciousness about politics and whether or not you are mature about politics, all that work is done before the vote. The agenda, talking with the candidates, seeing what can be done, how long is it going to take, 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, what can the state do? All that is done before you go vote. What can the federal government do?
None of that is done. We're the only group. We're the only constituency group in America who don't do all of that work before they vote. Now, if that ain't immature, give me another name for it.
I you know what? I can't dispute it. I think I agree 100%. Does it bother Edward, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I just want to ask. I agree with this new call. I'm sorry I didn't remember your name. Mentu, was it?
Yeah, Mentu.
Sorry if I didn't get that correct. But I totally agree with you about blacks in this country, or African Americans to be more specific, being very immature with their voting. But don't you think that there are certain policies that Barack has supported that blacks in general in this country support, like affirmative action and being against the death penalty?
Well, but if you look at, if you was to, I'll tell you what you can find. Go and look up, I was just looking it up today, the top 10 agenda items for black America. I forget who did it, but look it up and see what the top 10 items were. See, what we have done is, the issues that plague the black community are not necessarily the issues that plague America. That's the key.
You really believe that there's a difference in the black agenda than from mainstream America?
Absolutely. You want me to give you one?
Please. I'd like a few if you have them.
I'm going to give you one right now. Mass incarceration.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. That's a fair argument. I think that's one. I think that's an incredible one. Because you're talking about the disparity of African Americans who go into the who have to deal with the criminal justice system, as opposed to whites, I guess it's a disparaging percentage versus white America. I think that African Americans see some upwards of 35 to 45% of their population seeing a part of the incarceration rate. I think it's like 24% in the white community, and considering that the white community makes up about 212 million people and the African American community only makes up 39-40 million, yeah, that's a huge disparity.
Okay. Now, here's another one that people they tend to overlook, and that is, of course, black people say, oh, it's education. But now remember this. I want any one of you guys to name me one public school system, one white public school system, that is underachieving.
What?
Several.
A white school district, predominantly white, that is underachieving.
Sure. I can point to several.
Underachieving, several. Underachieving in a sense with the culture, with the cultural norm.
Well, as far as underachieving, in essence, anything that is run by the teachers' union in this country is an underachieving school, no matter what.
No, that's different now. Wait a minute. Maybe y'all didn't hear me well.
Okay,
I say, if go find me any black community. Aside to that is you'll see a white public school system, right? Any community, go to Cleveland, Chicago, any of those places. I said a white public school system.
Right.
Not a public school system where whites are teaching.
Well, you're talking about that whites are students.
Bingo.
Right. You're saying that the white students achieve more or achieve better in a all-white school in a public school system than
white
kids do in a public school system.
Right. Actually, if you look at the percentages of whites who are in public school, they're not even in the public school where the blacks are.
But see, I would counter that argument, Mattu.
Okay.
I would counter that argument by this. Now, I don't know if you ever saw this, and you appear to be somewhat extremely astute in this subject. So I'll ask you this. CNN, a couple of years back, I think it was almost in maybe 2009, they did this special report called Black in America. Soledad O'Brien was the anchor of the thing, and they did a series of like maybe a week-long programming called Black in America. And I talk about this often on the show, about this one Newsweek writer, a black man, who went to an all-white school, talked to one of the kids there, who's about 14 years old or so, he's a young teenager, and asked that white student in his white school who were the most popular kids in school. So he pointed out these 3-4 kids. They went and checked out the grade point average of these popular kids in school. Each and every one of them had a grade point average of B or above. He went to this another black school, went to another kid the same age, asked him who the most popular kids in his school. He figured out about three or four, checked out their grade point averages, and those African-American kids had a C average or lower. And the young black kid said, when he was asked about why it wasn't popular for, you know, those kids to have better grade point averages, and the black kid said, you don't want to be one of those kids with a grade point average of B or above because that's deemed non-black or unauthentic.
Oh, okay, Reese, we're on the same page. I guess I should have finished.
Okay.
What I was getting at when I was dealing with the education is the another issue that is germane to the black community is it is education, but it's not necessarily public education.
Mm-hmm.
The type of education that blacks need, they're not going to get it out of the public education system anyway. So, I mean, if we're leaning towards, school vouchers and choice and stuff like that, I actually agree with that. In other words, when you look at the statistics of the black community, that is where your agenda should come from. And when you look at those statistics, there are some damaging statistics that are not damaging. They're not as damaging in the broader community. So that's what you call a black agenda. Hey, these are the things that's pressing the most with us.
Well, if that's a black agenda, Matula, and I'll ask you this, and I want to bring in White Mike because I'm sure he wants to chime in on this. If the black agenda should be better education for their children, wouldn't they frown on the fact that the President of the United States, the one who they overwhelmingly support, is against a program that would allow school choices where parents get to choose what schools their kids get to go to get a better education? He's against it, and he's fought against it.
If they were mature, you're absolutely right. They would, but they're not mature.
So in
you're
essence,
absolutely right.
They're their own worst enemy.
That's right.
Let's jump in. White Mike is on the line. Hey!
Hey, man. Well, I kind of see where Matu's coming from. The point Matu's making, if I'm correct, is that it's going to be difficult to find a majority white school district that performs below the national average. And I'm just going to call national average high school graduation rate, because that's the standard for secondary education, is high school graduation. And,
every majority
black
district
in the country graduates below average.
Right.
It doesn't matter income level or not.
That's
there's
right.
Something seriously wrong in the community. I mean, I've given you the stat that says that from the school, from the college board, man, I'm echoing like crazy.
Oh, my bad. I'll take care of that. Go ahead.
That, white students from households with incomes of less than $10,000, which is poor. I mean, that's like Soviet Russia poor, score 865 points higher on the SAT than black students from families with incomes of more than $100,000.
Damn, that's horrible.
What?
That is horrible.
It's horrible, and that's from the college board.
You're talking about the Appalachian kids. You're talking about the kids who live in the Appalachian Mountains.
It doesn't matter where they're from. They can be dirt poor kids from Red Clay, Georgia. And if they are that poor, they still outperform wealthy black students. I don't understand it.
Now, that's deep,
man.
That's deep.
Hey, Reese, I just wanted to pop in and say that, while this conversation was going on, what I did was Google the terms white school system underachieving in America, and I cannot find one damn thing.
Are you serious?
It doesn't happen, man. I mean, it's weird.
Everything gets pulled up is about black underachievement or ethnic minorities underachieving. I can't find anything so far.
And the go-to when you bring up SATs, right, the go-to from liberals is, those tests are culturally biased. And that's fine, but it doesn't explain why Asian students outperform white students on the same test.
Right. It's a great question great statement, because I believe that if anyone was out of the mainstream, it would be some of these Asian kids that come to America, barely speak English, and kick ass on every level.
And it's the East Asians and it's the Indians. I mean, the Texaco Indians, not the casino Indians, because casino Indians are lost. But Texaco Indians same thing, man. They score high. And they come from an even more poor culture than the Asian kid.
I didn't mean to start no trouble, Reese.
No. Listen, that's what this show is about. I mean, you have to investigate and talk about each and every one of these issues, no matter how hard and tough they may be able to realize. But I think that is a clear example.
It's just weird, man. I mean, and the thing about, you know, not that I'm a black person, but I am kind of a Negro anthropologist. I don't understand why the black community gets so upset when anybody points fingers at them. I mean, we all know what the problems are in that community. Their illegitimacy, their high crime, their non-support of dependent children, and their failing in all aspects of society. And it's friggin' sad.
Hmm.
I mean, if you
can't
make it after 100 years, I don't get it, man.
Go ahead, Matu.
That's
probably from me. My bad. Go ahead, Matu. What were you going to say?
Yeah. No, I didn't want to open up no can of worms, but...
No.
But now, y'all really not going to like this.
Okay.
I actually am of the theory of what blacks are, their personality, their character, and everything, what they are, is exactly what the culture needs them to be, and that is exactly what they're going to be in this culture.
Well, look, man, I think that the reason that black people are, say, on the bottom of the social strata is so that poor white people don't rise up and kill everybody in the government. Because if you're some poor trailer trash in Alabama, at least you can say, at least I'm not black. You know? I think that's it. I think if black people weren't here to be the scapegoat and the goat, that poor white people would say, man, we're really getting screwed here. We better kill somebody.
And motivated
angry white people.
And I'm going to tell you something. That's coming even though black people are here.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming, man. There's going to be.
Trust me.
Yeah, it's coming. There's going to be a internal family feud that's got nothing to do with blacks. In America,
I think that Romney's going to win the election, okay? And I think it's because it's not that Romney is that beloved, because I don't think there's that many folks that are rabid Mitt Romney fans. But I think that, you know, I have no faith in our system, as you know. I don't believe elections are legit. I think that Romney's going to win because enough white people, the government's scared that if Obama gets back in, that enough white people are going to be like, look, we all hate this guy. It's time. And some bad things are going to happen. They're going to throw us Polly Walnuts, you know, Daddy Warbucks, to placate us, just to kind of stave off the eventual revolution. But I think revolution is coming, man.
You really think
that's why you're getting prepared, Mike? We know. Mike,
you remember?
He's got some food on reserve, some guns, some ammunition, some water,
a bunker.
He's ready for the apocalypse.
Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death, right?
Right.
Well, do we have liberty? We don't have any damn liberty. People just don't realize how little liberty they have because black people have less liberty than us. That's all.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying that everything that happens in the black community is unwarranted. You know, I'm a big fan of increased police presence and stop and frisk and all that. But once that happens there,
you're almost in police brutality.
That starts happening to Whitey. People are going to have enough.
Wait. You're a fan of the stop and frisk? Yeah, you're a fan of stop and frisk programs?
Dude, if you have one particular group of people that are committing the majority of that crime, the only way to do it is to stop and frisk those people. You're not going to hang out in the suburbs looking for illegal guns.
Stop and frisk sounds like Moscow to me, man, 1945.
Now, this is where the white Mike comes out. This is the real white Mike now.
Well, hey, look, here's the thing, man. If you're a cop and you're looking for methamphetamine, who are you going to stop? You're going to stop bikers and truckers and scary-looking, scaly-faced white people. That's just policing. That's policing. You're not going to look for LSD in the hood. You're going to go to Grateful Dead concerts where the LSD is. If you want to get people swinging rock and having illegal guns, you're going to hang out on 125th Street.
Right. You're not going to find whippets at a Kanye West concert.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, and the thing with the black community, man, it's weird because it's bitch that, you know, our communities are plagued by crime and you don't care. And when somebody does something to address the crime, it's like, whoa, why are you picking on us? Well, what the F do you want?
Yeah. You have to understand, Mike, that a lot of the black politicians have trained, you know, black people in this country to immediately react with racism whenever somebody, you know, points out a mistake or, you know, arrest a black person.
God forbid. God forbid you look for crack in the ghetto.
This is the thing. Everybody wants to complain, and the liberals are the same way. And I was telling Reese the other night, we were listening to somebody talk. I forget who it was. Everybody wants to complain. And, you know, these are the problems, but they don't come to the table with a possible solution on how to fix the problem.
Yeah, it's just, we know it sucks.
You enforce your way of how to fix the problem, it's still not, you know, now you're violating something else.
This could be solved by the black community if they handled their business and decided, you know what, this is bogus. We're tired of our 14-year-olds carrying guns. And 14-year-olds having babies, and kids having no fathers. So why don't we all step up as a people and fix this? But it ain't happening. It's not cool. It's not gangster, man. It's not gangster to be, you know, working a 9-to-5, punching a clock, and taking care of your kid.
I think this is where you're a little too simplistic. I hear exactly what you're saying, but this is where I came back with the theory, and nobody responded to it. But the when you're talking, whenever you see social dysfunctions, particularly when it's the masses, and when it's a dysfunction that is a dysfunction that you can see in the masses, the first thing you do, now this is science, and this is European science, you look into the system, because if it that's where you have your patterns. That's called a pattern. If it's a pattern, you don't look at the individual. So if you see black-on-black crime, a teenage pregnancy, a mass incarceration, drug use, you don't look at it and say, man, get that damn crack pipe out your mouth. If it was that easy, man, we all can just take bullhorns and ride them down the streets and get the damn crack pipe out your mouth.
I don't think you can discount the influence of the media. I mean, people are highly influenceable. That's why, as Eddie Griffin said, they call it TV programming, because they're programming you. And there are very few positive role models for black people in the media. I mean, there's just not. I mean, when's the last time you saw in a movie or a TV show, really, a nuclear black family? What, Cosby?
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, Entertainment Weekly did this article weeks, maybe even months after the Obama election, even after he was inaugurated, they said that what they were excited about was that the Obama election was going to flat out change television as we saw it, that we were going to see more African-American characters on sitcoms and TV shows and in dramas and thrillers and all this other stuff. And I look at the spectrum now of television, where is it? It's not there. It never happened.
Black people win Oscars, right? Denzel won it for what? Playing a dirty cop. Halle Berry won it what? For playing? Did she win it for?
She played for Monsters Ball. Playing a whore.
For Monsters Ball, she played a convict's wife, right?
Yeah.
Or did she win it for that Spike Lee movie where she played the crack whore?
She won it. No, not the crack whore. She won it for
crack
whore.
The whore.
Not the crack whore.
Did Viola Davis win it for playing a maid?
Right.
So other than that, I mean, there's, you know, you're going to win in Hollywood, you're going to be a maid or a criminal or a whore?
Let me say this, Reese. If anybody believes that the makeup of the black community and exactly what's wrong and the engineering behind it, if anybody believes that this dominant culture don't know exactly why the black community is where it is,
We the biggest fools on the planet.
I mean, how come, why can't people shake the programming? I did. Look, by all accounts, I grew up in a small town in South Louisiana. I should have grown up, you know, end up with no shoes on, fishing in a Piro boat in the bayou, being an ignorant son of a bitch. And yet I'm a fairly erudite, worldly, educated guy.
Hey, you
and
could, Mike.
Programming.
Mike, you could have had a job. You could have had a job on that TV show, Wrestling Alligators.
I have too many teeth.
The Swamp People, my favorite show. Yeah.
But I just told you guys, Reese. Whenever you're looking at social science, that's what it's called. When you're looking at a community, that's called social science. Here's what you do not do. You don't go find a snotty-nosed white boy, a snotty-nosed black boy who done pull themselves up by their bootstraps and say, aha, this is all y'all can do this. That's not science. The science is you look at the masses, the condition of the masses, and then you go in to see how is it that the masses are turning out this way. You don't go get one person who's been successful, put a bow tie on them, and put them on a microphone and say, y'all all can do this.
Yeah, but they do that with every other minority.
Yeah. What,
I mean, everybody looks at the Asian kid who's, oh, you know, his parents came from nothing, and now he's a software engineer. He's presented as a role model for something that can happen. You know, some poor kid from the mountains of West Virginia becomes a test pilot like Chuck Yeager, and, oh, you guys can all do this. Look, it's wonderful. But you don't get
that's
black.
What they do.
No,
Reese, that's what the white culture does. That what they go do is go find a black, shine their face up, that they made a little money, and then let you believe that we all can do this.
Yeah, but wow. How come it used to be that way? I mean, how come you used to have, like, Charles Drew and these
yeah,
guys?
Yeah, you know, exactly. It's a very, very valid point. I want to take a break real quick, guys. Stick around real quick. We're going to bring, of course, our good friend Dennis, who's back on. I'm sorry I kept him on hold for so long. Yes, JC. Yes, guess who's back? Yes, he is black. I just want to play Obama's favorite song. I heard that this was on his iPad. We'll be back.
Big Johnny Marty gonna pick a bit of cotton.
Great Johnny Marty gonna pick a bit of cotton. Great Johnny Marty gonna pick a bit of cotton. Great Johnny Marty gonna pick a bit of cotton. Oh Lord, 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 pick a bit of cotton.
Got to jump down, turn around and pick a bit of cotton. Got to jump down and turn around and pick a bill of cotton. Got to jump down and turn around and pick a bill of cotton. Got to jump down and turn around and pick a bill of cotton. Oh Lord, pick a bill of cotton. Oh Lord, pick a bill of cotton. Oh Lord.
Mary, why are you bugging?
Priest on the Radio, we're back. I had to play this. Got some very, very disturbing news yesterday. Although he's not my favorite superhero, Spider-Man is. He'll always be my favorite. Growing up as a kid, I've always been a fan of Spider-Man. But Superman is an American icon. And yesterday, I heard this bitch-ass nigga quit the Daily Planet. I'm just me. How's Clark Kent going to be Clark Kent? Who's going to work at the corner grocery? What the F is up with that? Clark Kent? He's quitting the planet? Mild-mannered reporter? What are we going to say now? Huh? 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 Mild-mannered deli grocer. What type of
sandwich maker? Let me get a turkey and cheese with lettuce, tomato, and mayo on a hero, yo.
I'm sorry.
Yo, my man.
Has Clark Kent been a victim of the Obama economy?
Yo, hold up, man. Ain't you that cat that works as a reporter?
Yo, my man, what you slice my ham real thin, son, real thin.
Yo, don't forget to put the salt and pepper on it.
Yo, I don't care if you can cut it with your hands, son, or with your eyes. You got to wash first, man. I'm sorry, I'm just losing myself here.
Hold up, I got some hand sanitizer right here in my bag.
Anyway, I'm sorry, I just had to bring that up. Okay, lastly, I want to bring this up real quick. Folks, I don't know whether or not you heard this audio, but I got to play it for you just to get your opinions. Apparently President Obama is leading in the polls.
Apparently
President Obama is leading in the polls by a wide margin.
As of when? Because as of this morning, when I woke up and watched the news, that was not the case.
Oh, but yes it is. Here's the story.
So according to a BBC survey, if our elections were held in other countries, the president would win in a landslide. The Brits questioned more than 21,000 votes in 21 countries, and roughly 50% preferred Obama, and only 9% favored Romney. The French were Obama's strongest supporters, followed by Australians, and of course, his fellow Kenyans. So why do places like France scream for four more years? Look, what France is doing these days, I guess misery loves company. So let's face it, asking the world about who should run America is like asking children how much candy should cost. Not a reliable source for intelligent decisions. The world somehow thinks a weakened America is way better for them. Quite the contrary, an America that is respected, even feared, and unencumbered by distractions like child obesity and weepy activism keeps the world much safer. Plus, if I wanted a trusted opinion, I'd never use a BBC poll. I'd go to a different poll. Left Bolessa, a Nobel Prize winner who deserved it, and former Polish president who endorsed Mitt Romney for president back in July. So whose opinion matters more, a man who helped kill communism and introduce free markets where there were none, or a snooty pile of British hacks? Looks like the Polish joke is on them.
Yeah, so apparently there was some poll that was taken that said, who would you vote to be the president of the United States? And Barack Obama
and
won
France
in a landslide.
France
and Australia.
Barack Obama won in a landslide because France was number and France was number one. Yeah, of course. Communist of the communists.
Let's bring in.
We're taking 75% of your shit.
Let's bring in the guys again. Anybody heard about this poll?
No.
You did?
In Poland.
I was like, if you really want to get a poll that impressed me, could you go to actually some Al-Qaeda terrorists and ask them which president they want to kill more?
Flash, from Germany, we want to know here in 1933, who do you think should be chancellor? Well, we think Adolf Hitler should be the one.
It's a freaking ridiculous question. It was almost like that poll that they did not too long ago, I don't even know what magazine it was which president would you rather have babysit your child?
Really?
Oh, you missed something, Reese, on Clark Kent.
What was that
very
about
important.
Clark? What's that?
He's going to write for Drudge.
Are you serious or are you kidding?
No. Well, no, Drudge posted that.
If you read the whole
story, he's leaving the print media to go into the blogosphere, where the news really
report.
Is, where the action is. To
oh, so
update
where
the image
is,
of
so
Clark
Kent,
because no one reads newspapers anymore.
Well, that's That's an interesting angle. Still don't like it, though.
So he's going to be in the blogosphere.
But I got a question, and maybe this is for Matus, who reminds me of a very high-priced ice cream.
What?
You never heard that? It used to be Häagen-Dazs, and then when the guy sold the company, he couldn't use Häagen-Dazs for the ice cream name, so he used it in his own name, Matus, which is a very high brand label.
Oh, well, Matus, his name is Matus.
Oh, well, this is Matus. How do I know? I'm a white guy. I'm an unperforming school. What the hell do I know?
Well, what was your statement?
You must have went to a black school.
Two things. Say what you want about Minister Farrakhan, but I don't see the black Muslims going around and saying we're going to be niggers. We're going to be respected people, and we're going to teach our people. And we're going to go around, and we're going to be neat, we're going to be clean, and we'll be self-respecting members of the community. I mean, say what you want about their ideology. You know, I don't see the black Muslims going out and robbing and doing dope and doing drugs. So I wonder if what the real problem is a spiritual void. Because I don't see people who come from the black churches or the white churches or any other church doing all these things and having this malaise. And that begins with a strong family.
I've seen every gangster rapper who got an award thank Jesus on stage.
they can mouth Jesus all they want, you know. But I'm talking about the real black community, the real white community lies in the family. And where do we see this decline? We saw the decline in the LBJ Great Society, where people could get welfare as long as they didn't have the fathers in the home, or if they had to say that the fathers are not in the home to get the welfare. So therefore, it broke down the community. And living in a housing project for 20 years, and there weren't any blacks in my housing project. There were whites. They were the dumbest people I've ever seen, the worst kind of slobs, on drugs, sitting on their ass, white, low-class people. And this is from the Dukakis era. And you'd complain to welfare, and they said, how come this guy is sitting on his ass all day and isn't working, collecting welfare? Well, he can't read. Poor Richard can't read. I said, well, how come poor Richard is sitting on a friggin' lawn chair reading the friggin' newspaper every day? They don't want to hear it. Because in the welfare department, their jobs depended on people who were poor or supposedly poor. It's a racket, or it was a racket. So they used the poor to foment and keep going on their own bureaucracy. So I don't know if we can blame black people. Maybe we have to blame the Democrat infrastructure of Hackorama.
You mean making victims out of anyone they choose
in order to advance their own agenda.
Right.
I mean, how else can you explain Detroit? Look at that cesspool. Why don't you clean up the shit that you have in Detroit, the rotten buildings, the rusted cars in the streets? That's the government's problem. The people can't do that. No matter how hard to try, and I was told by people living in the Detroit area, this is because it's all corrupt. You elect corrupt politicians, you get what you deserve.
Are you from Michigan, Matus?
Yeah, I'm from Michigan.
You're from Michigan.
That's why I mentioned Detroit, because he's from there. But
are you near Detroit, or are you further away?
Well, I'm actually 2.5 hours outside of Detroit, but. You know, with a little bit of experience with local politics, I used to be a city commissioner in the city of Benton Harbor for 6 years. So I have a pretty good understanding of how local politics work. One of the things that is hard for me to respond to is when somebody analyzes the obvious. You know, like you said, you look at Detroit. Clean it up. You said you had a question. I was looking for the question. You said you had a question for me. What was the question?
Was there a question, Dennis?
No, the question. Well, we have problems in the Boston area, but we didn't have riots in '67. Detroit did in the inner city. So, is it that people are so demoralized in the inner city they say, what the hell and who cares? Or is it like Matus said, that they're just immature and really don't know what's in their best interest that they keep on pushing the D-lover every time they have the chance, if they do vote, and they keep on getting lied to by people who they place their trust in.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, if a person wants to get a good and a holistic understanding of the black psyche, particularly the black psyche here in Europe, in the European country, you really need to know all of the history of black people here in this country, because I can walk you back to a time, like Mike, where the black community was thriving. Not even talking about the Nation of Islam, Black Wall Street. There were 15 or 16 black self-sustained, independent, whole communities with all of the infrastructure in place.
I grew up in an area that had been segregated.
Okay.
You know, and under segregation, the black community did better than under integration.
Who is that talking from?
Economically.
That's White Mike. He's saying that under segregation, that black kids did better than they did when integration began.
Well, I know
there were more successful black entrepreneurs under segregation.
I'm not buying that.
I'm thinking if that might be the case, it was because of the culture was more spiritual in the nation.
No, it's because there was less competition. Black entrepreneurs cornered
the
black market.
Two white men talking about the black fight.
hey, Matu, they're, listen. Because they're white doesn't mean that they're not alive.
Well, I mean, but I...
But no,
Well, I told you from the jump, you know, white people know why the black community is the way it is. But somebody asked me a question, then I guess...
Well, no, go ahead, Matu. You respond. You respond.
But the bottom line is this. What you... To me, it's really hard to see or listen to a white man assess the black community. This is just me. I'm being honest. Because
it's difficult for you? Is that what you said? You said it's difficult for you to watch
well,
that?
Well, let me tell you, but I can tell you why, though. One, whenever you do hear them, first of all, they don't know the entire history of the black communities, and they analyze it from the way we are now, with snotty noses and crack pipes and stuff like that. That's one. The second reason is, they're going to give you a worldview of a European. That's who they are. That's all they can give you, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, let me ask you this. This is serious, very serious, okay? If the white man, the European view, is the dominant, all right, and the oppressor, is that where you're coming from?
No, I said the dominant.
Okay, all right.
Because
I was going to ask what happened when we had liberated blacks who went to Liberia, and because they were Americanized blacks, they oppressed the native African people in Liberia to this day.
Well, because they had been in the dressing room with you for too long, and they went over there acting like you.
And can I jump in for a minute?
Okay, now I'm being real now. I'll be honest. My interesting take.
Since the 1600s, you don't get more American than I am. And I have
Hold on one second, guys. Matu, what about if it's a white person that grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood that is assessing blacks, as you call it?
Yeah, what if everything that you knew as a white person was pretty much ingrained in the black community? This is where you grew up. These are who your friends are, who you socialize with, how you act, how you dress, how you pretty much view the world is through the prism of living in the black community. Can that white person then be able to assess black people?
Yeah, if you notice what I said, Reese, I said, for me, in most cases, is because that's what I said. Now you got to hear everything that I said. Most cases, what they're going to give you, one is a snapshot. I mean, what they see right now, blacks toting guns with their pants hanging down off their ass and smoking crack. And then they do not know the chronological history of black folk. Now, but let me go back to White Mike, because he made a good point about this, when blacks were segregated.
Right.
I think we should be segregated now. And I absolutely agree with him that when you had a sense of ownership, we own this. But now here's what you got to remember now. What happened to those functional black communities? We didn't wake up all one door and say, hey, man, let's go out and smoke some crack and just skip this community that we done built. Let's just go smoke crack and the hell with the community we built. What happened to them?
Yeah, I mean, look, man, now my middle school had been Charles Drew High School.
Yeah, what happened to them?
In segregated town. And when I was a kid, all the stores around that school were still black-owned businesses. I mean, we went at lunch and got snacks at a little black grocery store. There were black-owned hairstylists and black-owned bakeries. And I don't think they're like that anymore. Came in and took over, or the Asians took over, I don't get it. But there's no black entrepreneurship anymore.
Okay, what happened to it? Can anybody answer that question? What happened to those fully functioning black-owned communities that we had? Since everybody is talking about the black plight, what happened to them?
It changed, dude.
Edward, what do you think happened?
One of the major things was the welfare great society system. Another thing that many people overlook is the minimum wage laws and unions. Unions were vehemently against blacks coming being entrepreneurs in this country. They did everything they could to make sure black businesses were pushed down as much as they could possibly be.
Well, see, there was no unionism in the Deep South where I was.
Yeah, I was going to say, I
think a lot of it happened is that, I don't know, it became socially uncool to grind it out like that. I mean, if you're in a convenience store, you're working 24/7 pretty much, and it's easier to do something else, and it's cooler to do something else.
Let me ask you this. If you guys think this, and I want to ask Matu, and I want to bring Sally D in from Massachusetts. Let me ask you this. What I saw, maybe because I'm a little younger, than going through sort of that systematic change through the civil rights movement. I'm born literally right somewhere middle ground. I'm born in 1969. But this is what it is that I believe that I saw. I believe that the African-American ideal started to change so dramatically in the 70s and the 80s where they became so westernized. And get my point here when I say westernized. When African-Americans became more interested in buying certain things, be it washing machines, air conditioners, refrigerators, cars, clothing, that anything that was considered traditional or black-owned was thrown to the wayside. I use that example to say you can't have a Carl Kani, a Sean John, a Fat Farm, a Cross Colors, all black-owned clothing companies. You can't have these companies survive when the African-American plight today in a show of wealth is buying your Gucci and Prada and Louis Vuitton. If you get my meaning, I believe that same thing was happening in the early 70s into the 80s, that when that dynamic started to change, that the, as Matu might even agree with, that European, that sort of Europeanization, I guess would be the best way to put it, of the black American, they became so westernized and so Europeanized, I guess for lack of a better word, that they started leaving what was considered what was black owned or black established.
Well, yeah, I mean, just look at the liquor consumption. I mean, brothers don't drink cheap wine anymore. They drink Hennessy.
Let's bring Sally in. Sally, hey, you're joining us late today.
I am, but you hit on something that I thought took off pretty nicely. I wanted to just throw something out there. So we've had this conversation in the past. I still think we're a nation that operates on race. And I'm wondering, now I was a kid, I was very young, 10, 11 years old, back in the early 70s. But, you know, I got to ask the question, and I don't know if we have anybody on the phone that's maybe 56 or mid-50s, but
62.
You know, in the busing era, wasn't that roughly the time when almost forced white to hang out together. Wasn't that kind of the beginning of that?
Right. It was a federal mandate forcing blacks and whites to intermingle in some sort of way.
My thing on this is that I wonder You know, because I remember growing up, I can honestly say my dad had racist views, and I never understood it. And I'd ask him why, because as a kid, you don't understand things. He'd say, oh, you'll figure it out when you get older. And the reality is that people were forced into these situations, and they played nice, so to speak. But I think that kind of thing, when you pull people and you say, no, you can't have a neighborhood anymore. You know, we're all gonna do this together, and you know, we're gonna tear apart the black neighborhoods, we're gonna tear apart the white neighborhoods, and you're all gonna play nice in the same sandbox. Well, what ends up happening is that the anger is still there. It's even worse because now you're forcing people to assimilate. You're not letting it happen naturally, and I'm wondering if that did more damage to race relations at this point than things maybe if they just took their own natural course. We used to have different neighborhoods of different ethnicities, and I'm wondering if there was less hatred.
Yeah, nobody
I honestly don't know the answer
Italians...
to. I'm just throwing it out there because I.
No, no, you're right. Nobody frowned on the fact that Italians had their own neighborhoods. The Jews had their own ghetto, which is where the word comes from. You know, the Irish, you know, who had their own communities and stuff like that. Nobody frowned on that back then.
But, you know,
not only did they have their own community, they had their own churches, their own funeral homes. It was not a melting pot, but a mosaic. And
yeah,
now
this one-size-fits-all doesn't work.
And people still are pushing the one-size-fits-all crap.
Go ahead,
I can say that I wasn't real happy when I had to sit behind 300-pound Shaniqua with a Jerry Curl in a non-air-conditioned classroom and watch her Jerry Curl drip on my desk. I'm just saying it didn't exactly make me a fan of integration.
I'm a white man, and I'm going to tell you this in all seriousness. I identify more with Alan West, Bill Cosby, and Supreme Court Clarence Thomas than I do Lady Gaga or Madonna.
Let Matu go ahead. Go ahead, Matu.
I'm on the internet radio. I'm finna get off. What you doing?
Matu, are you there?
He's there.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, Matu, I'm sorry, buddy. We got a little bit of your private conversation. Go ahead, there, buddy.
I called it to my wife. listen, one of the things, man, is that there's two schools of thought. Well, you have to watch the black psyche and what they were attempting to do since we've been in this culture.
Mm.
Now, you mark my words on this, like the brother went and did the research on the non-existence of white school districts failing.
Right.
Any black ideology or theory that is rooted in independence, free from whites, and we're going to do it by ourselves, they never survive in America. Never. The culture never lets them survive. Okay. Now, I ask you guys a question. What happened to these functioning black communities? The dominant culture destroyed them. After they destroyed them, then you get into the history of, hell, what else can a black do? You don't want us to have our own black-owned bus lines. And then you don't want us to ride on yours. Look at the history. All you got to do is follow the chronological history of what black folks have attempted to do here in this culture.
It begs the question.
Yeah,
who is doing the oppressing and for what purposes?
It's been the policies of liberals in this country.
No, see, you're coming too far up. You're coming too far up when you're talking about liberals in this country. You're talking within the last 50, 60 years. I said you have to do the – see, that's what I'm – you can't snapshot. You can't snapshot the black community and say we're gonna come up with our theories of what's wrong based off this snapshot.
But no one's answered my question.
I think it's a long history. I could get into this more, but you know I can't, guys, because we reached the end. But I want to thank everybody for calling because it's a very, very lively discussion. Edward in Connecticut, Sally D in Massachusetts, Dennis the Mass Menace, and White Mike. And, of course, we welcome you, Matu. Please, thank you so much for calling in.
Yes.
I know it's your first time on it. We really appreciate you being here. And please feel free to call us up and join the conversation whenever you like.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. We will see you tomorrow at same bat time, same bat channel. Teresa on the radio. See you then.